And now what all of us have been waiting for, to share his Carolina story, which has had almost a year to be embellished, as if it would need to be embellished. And a member of the GA board class of 2020, Greg Parent. Greg?
Thank you, Doug. And it's great seeing so many faces. I actually spent more time than I care to admit. I was up till 4 writing about 14 pages and then rewrote it about 2 hours ago and finished about 5 minutes before we started to print it. So Roger, if you have to cut me off, I understand. It's going to get printed out and you can read the other 20 pages after that. I'll try and get through it. I've been fortunate enough to come to Carolina 3 different times in my life. Once as an undergrad, again as a law student, and finally in an alumni capacity with this esteemed GAA board. Each time has been filled with unique experiences, opportunities to learn and meet wonderful people, and to grow as a person. My love for UNC started back in the 5th grade when a guy from my hometown in Gastonia visited my elementary school. He was the tallest human I'd ever seen and looked like a giant standing in our swarm of well-wishers. My biggest memory of his visit was when our teachers got him to sign 3 or 4 mimeograph carbon copy sheets so that everyone in the school could get a replica of his autograph. That giant was James Worthy, and he was a Tar Heel. The following year, he and Sleepy Floyd put my little town on the sporting world map as the Tar Heels brought Dean Smith his first national title. And later that spring, the junior high band director, I was a 6th grader, came to school and he demonstrated the saxophone by playing the Carolina Fight song. I considered that an omen and I signed up on the spot. From then on, I knew I wanted to be a Tar Heel and come to Chapel Hill. There's really never any other consideration for another school. I remember that C-Tops confirmed every dream I had about Carolina being the place for me. I made a couple of forever friends who are still in my life to this day. Even my 1988 orientation counselor came by through Atlanta a couple years ago and we spent the day reminiscing how she brought me on stage to dance to the butt. And for those of you who remember that, doing the butt, sexy, sexy, we just stick your big butt out and I can do that with ease. We laughed about that 30 years after the fact. My freshman year was as amazing as you could expect. I loved dorm life and the idea of having so many diverse people gathered in one spot. I may not have been the most studious of students in Winston dorm, but I was definitely the most interested in meeting and knowing everyone. I think my EQ outpaces my IQ by a country mile. So it was nirvana to make new poker friends along with singing with the guitar players across the hall from me in the 4th floor bathroom, because that's where the superior acoustics were. And then my favorite activity, staying up late, talking with people and learning different points of view. Carolina and Winston Doran specifically introduced me to so many of the names in my iPhone and the souls in my heart. I met my first best friend at Carolina by doing one of those things I usually do at the board meetings, kind of shooting from the hip and not preparing. I went with my gut without a fully formed plan. My friend's roommate was sitting out in the hall and she said, you know, Melissa's in there crying because she's homesick. I don't think you should go in there and bother her right now. And I paused because I had been homesick and I just said, no, went right in, sat down with her, hugged her and just got through it with her together. And that began my best friendship that freshman year. We spent time going to Lenore Dining Hall, watching 30 something. If you guys remember that show, drinking strawberry daiquiris. I still like a daiquiri, don't judge. And listening to music, everything from Bob Seger to modern English. And she's still someone I mark my life's progress with. She recently became a grandma and I risk my life by calling her grandma all the time, but she's the most beautiful grandma on the planet. And it's just a joy to get to see that phase of her life. She's always been ahead of me on things. So I get to learn from her on how to rear children and I'm taking notes on her as a grandma. On the last day of my freshman year, it was hard saying goodbye to her. And I remember being so mentally exhausted from Carolina. I just ran upstairs to my room, bawled my eyes out, and then spent that evening with my roommate, Ruffin Hall, over in the cemetery next door to Winston Dorm. And we split a 6-pack of Budweiser and just recounted the whole year. And that next day was the only time I've ever been happy to leave Chapel Hill and get home. Every time since then, I've driven home slowly and really regretted having to leave town. My sophomore year was where I really started to discover things about myself and establish what I call the new minimums. I've always called new minimums things that you've done before, because if you've done it once, you ought to be able to do it again and then use that as a baseline to shoot for more, bigger and better things. As a volunteer with the Department of Student Affairs, under the guidance of Dean Fusehall, I was tasked
with... Hey there.
What's that? Was that her? Okay. I was tasked with being a minority advisor, and I was assigned to one kid named George over in Granville. We would meet on occasions, and I thought he was nice. And a couple of months after that initial meeting, my shy friend revealed himself to the world when he took off from outside the lane and threw down a thunderous dunk against Marathon Oil in an exhibition game. My mentee was George Lynch. I cannot claim one iota of responsibility for any of his success, but our friendship continued throughout my college career, his professional playing career, and was rekindled most recently when he was down here in Atlanta as the head coach at Clark Atlanta. I recall one time bringing my sister to a football game, and she's a looker, and George was with the guys coming up the stands, and he looked at me and looked at her, and then he saw me, and I motioned him over here because I was already planning out tickets for life in the NBA. And this was all going through my head, and around that time, I look over, my sister's not paying him any attention. And so in a matter of minutes, all my dreams were dashed because my sister didn't give George the time of day. But for years thereafter, George and I would stay in touch. And one of my most meta kind of surreal moments was when I took him with me as my guest to my courtside seat and got to stand there with him on the sideline and then watch as Wayne Ellington came out of the tunnel, made a beeline for us and just talked. And I just stood there watching these guys talk Carolina, two different eras, obviously Dean Smith and Roy Williams, and me, the biggest Tar Heel homer of all, getting to be there. And you know I got that photo. Carolina wasn't always about meeting people and having brushes with greatness. It was a constant challenge that often kicked my ass and really forced me to dig deep to tap my potential. I was often intimidated and racked with self-doubt, not paralyzing self-doubt, but concern that I was in over my head. Never was that more pronounced than in my favorite class called Honors 32. I was literally not qualified to be in that class with Dr. Paul Brandis because I had ignored one important detail during drop ad. In my defense, Whitney, you don't know about this, but back in the day, drop ad looked like stockbrokers on the New York trading floor. It was in Woolen Gym, and you had to go in there, hey, I got Psych 10, and you just had to be a wheeler and dealer. You guys had Caroline. You guys are soft, you and Ashton, I tell you. But back then it was like that. And when I got to the class, I ignored the prerequisites. It said you had to be pre-med or pre-law. And as a sophomore at that time, I was neither. And in this class had Morehead scholars, brilliant students from all over the world, and a lot of future doctors and attorneys. And I was intimidated, kind of like I was when I first got on this board of badasses that are on this screen with me today. But after one of the speeches I had to give, and we had to always give speeches and learn public speaking and speak from the heart, Dr. Brandis pulled me aside and he said, you know, I really like what you had to say. And I thought you made some solid points. And that was the, I didn't budget in tear time, Roger, sorry. It was the attaboy I needed at that time. And it made me realize then that I had a voice and it was my own and I never forgot it. And about halfway through the semester, he passed away, for those of you who know and remember. And I was distraught, and our class was replaced by an adjunct that came along, and I didn't want to give that guy the time of the day because he wasn't Dr. Brandis. But he grew on me, and that class was transformative in my life. And I remember later that summer, I was taking summer school classes, and I had to have an emergency sinusitis procedure that made me have to withdraw. But of all people to come see me, it was the adjunct professor, Lee Lambert, who came by and brought me his personal VCR and three or four movies to watch and sat with me while I was in the hospital until my parents could get up there to see me. And so that was my favorite class at Carolina. As I matured at Carolina, like many of you, I availed myself of all the activities on campus. I volunteered on committees that held my interests. I campaigned for floor president. I wrote letters to the editor, fell in love. I worked at the student union. I got my heart broken. I camped out for tickets. I pulled all nighters. Steve one time saw me do this, sneak airplane bottles into Keenan. I fell in love again. I helped my roommate run for student body president. And I had some heroic feats on the intramural fields and basketball courts of Woolen Gym. But I formed friendships throughout those years that permeate my life to this day. Based on this old REM poster I saw one time, I endeavored to sum up my entire career in 4 words: laughed, cried, learned, loved. When I thought about attending law school, I reached out to my former journalism professor, Tom Bowers. And at the time I was working as a claims adjuster, but I dressed like him. I wore those braces, those leather braces and stuff. He always used to wear those. So I sent him a picture of me in those braces and a photo from graduation. I didn't think he'd remember me. Not only did he remember me, he recalled talking with my parents at graduation. And I asked him to list him as a reference for law school. But that rekindled our friendship. And when I was back on campus, we'd go to Duke games together. And he even tasked me with acclimating his daughter's best friend when she moved to Atlanta. When he retired in 2006, he invited me to come up. And at that time, we had our first child, an infant named Jacob. And he said, "Well, I'm only letting my grandson and your son come to that graduate, to my retirement ceremony." So we've been special friends ever since. But, you know, as is often the case with me, it's a recurring theme: law school nearly broke me. I was overmatched. On the one hand, I was class president, and I was student body vice president and the unofficial mayor and a member of the honor court. But on the other hand, I didn't really have a love for the combative nature of law school, didn't like some of the duplicitous classmates, and it was hard getting my brain wrapped around the archaic study of law. But during that time, I had another professor kind of reassure me with just a compassionate talk that treated me like a person, not just a faceless 1L. That professor was Lou Bilionis and then his wife, Ann Hubbard. And what they did every year, they did the public interest in law auction, and they do a dinner. And this is $1995, y'all, but we bid $410 on that dinner. I didn't have it. So my parents kind of sent me some money. Like, "I don't know what the hell you're doing. All this money you're wasting on dinner, but seems important to you. So we'll help underwrite this stuff." But thereafter, every year, people saw how crazy and loyal I was to them. So I never really had to bid that much again, because people knew I'd go to the mattresses to get dinner with my favorite professors. UNC provided the connections that brought me to Atlanta. I summered in Raleigh at Manning, Fulton, and Skinner. And then one of the people who had summered there with me had also summered at Hawkins and Parnell in Atlanta. And that person, ironically enough, was a freshman when I was an upperclassman, and I had been her orientation counselor. So she returned the favor by putting in a good word for me at Carolina. So it can't get any more connected than that. And that's how I got down there. And when I got there, there were 4 or 5 Tar Heels already there. So I had a welcoming home and only one Dukie. I moved to Atlanta in 98, and less than a year later, I was one of the co-leaders of the Atlanta Carolina Club. And that's where Doug and I believe, kind of met. And I was one of the big faces there. And that role led me to such opportunities as meeting Phil Ford and getting to introduce him, and getting to introduce Woody Durham in a way that Woody Durham used to do when he was on the radio. The favorite part of that job, though, was getting to do the admitted student receptions, where we'd get to kind of rally to the kids who'd gotten into Carolina, but also public Ivies like UVA and Michigan and the real Ivies. And my favorite story is one lady who was considering Notre Dame, and her parents, you know, I talked with them and answered all the questions. And what he said, when she finally agreed, I gave the mom my phone number. I said, "If you ever need anything, you call me." Well, later that fall, she called me and she said, "My daughter's having a hard time." And just like I'd done before with my first best friend at Carolina, I said, "Well, give me her number, I'll call her." And I reached her, she was walking across campus. So I told her to go to South Building. I said, "Stand on the steps. Now look back at the library and orient yourself till you can see where the bell tower looks like a dunce cap." I said, story I've heard, or the legend I believe, is that that dude did not like the other dude, so he made it look like a dunce cap. And she kind of giggled, and I walked her through campus on the phone, and we stayed in touch. And around 2005, when I went up there for the national championship weekend, like I always do, I got to hang out with her in her music hall. She was a cellist, and I never called her by her name. Her name's Laura. I always called her Yo-Yo Ma. But I got to sit with her and watch her play for me and just see the Tar Heel she's become. And she's a beautiful Tar Heel now. So I love that role, being with the Carolina folks. I'm living my best life right now. When I see these faces and see the friendships and just think about the fond memories, it's gone really fast. But my success still isn't doing everything right the first time. My success is kind of dusting myself off, get back in the saddle and trying to do it again, avoiding those mistakes. Usually I make new mistakes, but occasionally I find my groove and I get it going. And let me tell you about my career now. I'm a mediator. And that story of me being a mediator might be the best or the most Carolina story of all. You know, I used to envy people like my friend Dave Hanners, who loves what he does and would tell you he's never worked a day in his life, and other folks like that. I used to hate them. Like, I don't get that. I've always had jobs. I had a job working in lawn care. I had a job at Chick-fil-A. I had a job as an adjuster and a job as a defense attorney. Job, job, job. But these folks who've never worked a day in their life, I get it now. For the last 11 years, I haven't had to work. I've had a passion in doing what I do. And I got to tell you, I bring Carolina to the thing every day. I'm usually in my Julian Carolina socks. I've got the belt with the metal decals that say NC. I'm wearing Roy's tie right now. Funny story about this. I was in Julian's and I was getting ready to leave, having spent more money than socks should ever cost a human being. And the lady said, "What about this tie?" I said, "It's nice." She goes, "This is the one he wore for the championship." I'll take it. another time I was in there and Julian was in there himself. And I was with BJ and Amy, and he kind of pushed me out of the way to get a picture with them. But he said, "These socks would look good on you." I'll take the socks. So I try not to go into Julian's too much. But, you know, my jackets and everything say Tar Heel 1. One of my fun moments when I was on as the vice chair, Linda and I got to have lunch with, I call him KG, but the chancellor. And I said, "You know, you might be chancellor, but my coat says Tar Heel 1. You got to show that off. You can see the little Carolina lapel here, and I've got it on the sleeves. But what I do as a mediator, it's not just a fashion show. I get to help people. I get the honor of being there to help bring resolution to what is often a family's worst nightmare. Sometimes it's holding hands with a family and praying over a photo of their lost loved one. Other times, it's a hug of gratitude like that one in Winston Dorm 32 years ago, where a family finds themselves appreciative of the big lug and the Roy Williams tie, who's compassionate enough to hang in there with them as they process their grief. Few things in my professional career, or hell, even in my personal life, are as validating when a grief-stricken mother collapses in my arms because I was there to help her honor her child. As a mediator, I get to be the voice of reason. I also get to help model the right way to do things, the Carolina way. I like building bridges, not walls. I like modeling the good behavior and helping get people to yes, not you know, stoking the fires. What makes me a great mediator made me a bad advocate. My senior partners did not like when I would come in and go, "I see the other side. They got a point." So I'm where I need to be. Don't worry. I won't be coming for any of your regular law jobs. Wade, you're safe. My most recent return home to Chapel Hill started with a call from Dana Simpson, advising me that I was up for consideration for the GA board. And I asked him two questions that day. I said, "What do they do on this board? And are you still married to that beautiful lady you dated in law school who looked like Ferris Bueller's girlfriend?" And yes, to the second answer. But to the first one, he said, he tried to explain it really. And Doug, I know this kills you, but I still don't know what we do. I absolutely love, however, that I've had the honor of doing it for the past 4 years. My realization that I belonged on this board occurred at the conclusion of my first nominating committee. And ironically, John, I'm going to reference the same people you did, Tony and Tom. I was listening into them talk and they were as passionate as I was. And I looked at them, I'm like, I mean, y'all are retired, right? I mean, y'all should be acting your age and slowing down and being at peace with the world. And so I looked over there, I kind of leaned in and I interrupted them and said, "Do you guys still get passionate like this or do you slow down?" And you know, Tony, and I used to do Tony's voice till I realized that his voice was because of cancer. That's how he talked. But he kind of looked at me quizzically, and he's only looked at me this way one other time. It's when I asked him whether he was a Republican or a Democrat. But he looked at me and he's like, "Son, are you crazy? It gets worse." And then I knew I was with my people and I belonged on this board. When I talk about this board to the mortals back home, I often describe it like the Super Friends at the Hall of Justice. Where each of us is a superhero in our own standalone movie or our own communities. But when we're together, we're just regular people hanging out. And we don't have to take on all the challengers. Sorry, Roger, you got to stop. When I stop, you got to stop the timer. You know, we don't have to take it on and we don't have to explain our superstitions watching a game. It's okay if we switch our jackets and turn it inside out and change seats and flip our underwear in the bathroom because that helps us win. Funny story about that, by the way. I've gotten to be friends with Kevin Salvadori down here, and he assured me none of that helps. It's the guys on the court. And I just laughed. I'm like, oh, silly boy, silly boy. But he's tall, so you got to do it from a distance. I've been blessed and enriched with new numbers in my phone and souls in my heart ever since I started my term on the board and then completed the extra lap as the vice chair. My best contribution to this board might be establishing the moniker of Rudy to all of us regular schmoes who feel privileged to rub elbows with Carolina's finest. They're not here anymore, but my board wife, BJ, who you all remember, and I have a bond. It's going to last to one of us as worm food. And I defy you to find a more beautiful soul. I don't know if he's on here, but Mike Pretty is a hybrid with the wisdom of Yoda, the compassion of clergy, and just enough untapped potential mischief to be a perfect wingman for all of our pre-meeting lunches, post-dinner drinks, and early morning breakfast early morning breakfast with Linda and the gang. Hayes Holderness makes retirement and playing golf between going to Carolina games and spoiling grandkids look like a life goal. You may not know this, but Sharon Lawrence is my parents' favorite actor, and she's been shooting a lot of shows down here in Atlanta, and she and I have gone to dinner so many times, I don't know whose turn it is to buy. But one time I earned Son of the Year because she came over to the house when my parents were here, and you've never seen my dad so angry as me not using his phone to take a picture because I had a superior camera, and he's like, just take it with my damn phone, because he wanted a picture with his favorite person. So Sharon will always be a special person to me for that reason. You know, Tom Tillett comes to Atlanta every once in a while, but he comes for two reasons, work or Eagles games. If it's work, he'll meet with me. If it's an Eagles games, he doesn't have time for me. So, Tom, I hope to get to see you for work sometime soon. My brother Dave Hanners is on here, and he hasn't made it to Atlanta yet, but he came to Gastonia on Black Friday a couple of years ago and brought my mom a bottle of wine like he was recruiting a power forward out of Ashbrook to come to Chapel Hill. And he might be the nicest and most generous soul on the planet, but do not anger him by offering to pay for a meal, because it's kind of like arguing with a Wookiee. You let coach win, and you don't do that. So any of you who he takes to dinner, just get alligator arms when it comes time for the bill, and then he'll just say thank you. I don't know if Rich is here. I see Rich. There he is. Rich, I think about you every time my trainer asks us to hold a plank on Zoom, because I know you have a 10-minute record and I'm only like 9 minutes behind you. So one day I'll catch you and do that. But I curse your name every time we go to plank mode, but I still love you. And I just want to say this too. The backbone of our organization is the wonderful staff. For a while we had the Strudies, the staff Rudies led by Diana, and then some folks who moved. But my first day back there, I got to see my old classmate, Dave. I got to see Tania, who was always a liaison for us, Steve, who was a liaison for us, and then Roger, who goes back to my time on campus when his wife was the assistant area director at Henderson Residence College. And it always felt like a warm blanket coming out of the dryer when I step on campus and see those folks. But I also enjoyed meeting the new faces. Stephanie, who calls me for no reason at all, just to talk, and we'll talk for like an hour. Diana, Regina, and especially Paula, who, is Paula not there anymore? Okay. I can say this. I was always tasked with getting her a gin and tonic when I'd arrive at the dinner, and I had a pretty big hand so I could hide it. And I don't think you ever caught on, Doug. But they always made the special weekends. Doug, I want to thank you for giving validation to someone like me who considers himself, with all due respect to Roy, the biggest Tar Heel out there. For 4 years, I got to brag that I was legitimately recognized as being among the greatest Tar Heels because I was on the board. And Linda, with all due respect to you, I told everyone I was the second and most important Tar Heel by law because I was a vice chair. So I thank you for that. I used to get mad that you wouldn't let me sit beside BJ at dinner or by Hayes in the morning meetings on Saturday, but I think you had a bigger plan because I always got to sit beside some pretty amazing people. Tom, I see your smiling face up there. I didn't think we'd have anything in common until we started talking like photos about cameras and photography, like a couple of kids with their first Polaroid, and I always enjoyed that. Doug, if you ever call me, because the bell tower is listing one way or the other, it won't be a matter of whether I come. It'll be a matter of who I pick up from this board along the way, and I'll be there. Love you guys. I miss you guys, clearly. Thank you for your friendships and for let me share a little bit of me with you. And I hope you made you, I hope I made you proud. My name is Greg Parent, and I'm a Tar Heel.